Randy Mosher joins me this week to discuss the link between storytelling and beer. This is Beersmith Podcast number 234.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 234, and it's late April 2021. Randy Mosher joins me to discuss the link between storytelling and beer. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blichten Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. Order yours today. Visit Blichten Engineering for more information. Again, that's blichtenengineering.com. And finally, I urge you to give Beersmith 3 Brewing Software a try. If you've not downloaded the new 3.1 update, grab it now as it includes improved data storage, additional dry hop options, new mash pH models, new add-ons, and much more. To download your free 21-day trial, go to beersmith.com today. Again, that's beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome back Randy Mosher. Randy is the author of books Mastering Homebrew, Radical Brewing, and Tasting Beer. He's also a partner in two breweries near Chicago, Five Rabbit and Forbidden Root. Randy, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
It's great to be here, Brad. I'm doing pretty good. We're starting to come out of the whole pandemic thing, and so that's a good thing.
How's life in beautiful Chicago, I think, right?
Yeah, the trees are in bloom. It's like, springtime.
Well, it's great having you back. How are things at Five Rabbit and Forbidden Root Breweries been doing, especially with the COVID pandemic?
Well, we're holding our own. Five Rabbit is a brewery with a tap room.
Yeah.
So and we're kind of in an industrial area. We were doing big parties and salsa night and, because we're a Latin brewery. And before the pandemic, that was bringing in a pretty good chunk of our revenue. And so that all kind of shut down. So we're running pretty lean on staff. And of course, nobody's buying any draft beer up until recently. So it's been a struggle. The PPP loans helped. So we're surviving. Yeah. We purchased a smaller brew system, so we'll be able to do some one-offs on a five barrel just to do some brewery only sales on some crazy beers that are hard to do in our, mm-hmm. our 30 barrel.
Yeah, they started opening things up a little bit there.
Yeah, the breweries are starting to take draft now, so that's a good thing. And we're hoping to kind of expand, grow the business a little bit, and just keep moving. Forbidden Root's a full brew pub, mm-hmm. and we've got the one in Chicago. We also have one in Columbus, Ohio. We've been doing pretty good. I mean, it's a Herculean effort, but we've been doing like a half to two thirds of our regular business. Worse in the winter when it was slow anyway, plus pretty severe restrictions. But, we've been kind of making it work. I think by the time we get done with all this, we'll be in a better spot because we've had to bust our butts in terms of giving people reasons to come in and keep a lot of new beers flowing in and be creative about the online beer dinners and all that kind of stuff and just try and get new people to see us and patronize us. So I think we'll be stronger for it, but it's been a tough time. So
yeah, but challenging times for everybody.
Yeah, it's difficult, but we're doing. Business is getting better every week, and the good weather helps, and
Yeah, because you take people outside. Well, Randy, you wanted to talk about a new topic today, which is telling stories with beer. I found that to be a very interesting topic. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by telling stories with beer?
Well, yeah, I mean, beers kind of tell a story a little bit anyway. It's almost inevitable. And it's sort of a good thing to You know, I mean, we're craft breweries, right? So we don't have an ancient monastery or some castle brewery or something to tell our story. We kind of got to figure out what it is as we go. And so to be able to just try and infuse your brand with some ideas, and I mean, you can do all the marketing you want, but the beers really speak for you. So it's that whole idea of trying to find ways to speak to the brewery through the beers and have them give voice to what you're doing. You know, we like to be creative. We like to show off what we're doing. Give people new ways to think about us, new ways to think about beer, new ways to think about whatever it is we're trying to represent, you know?
Yeah. Well, back when I was in the Air Force, I used to actually tell stories whenever I spoke in front of a large group. I found it was really the only way to effectively reach out and get a point across to a large group. But really, stories are the very center of our interpersonal relationships. Why are stories so important to us as human beings?
Well, I think it has to do with the hippocampus. So the hippocampus is part of your limbic system that is your sort of memory manager. Mm-hmm. And the hippocampus works in something called episodic memories. And episodic memory has a what, which would also include a who, and a where, and a when. Right. And so you mm-hmm. could take any kind of abstract old facts outside of that. And it's sort of like, well, I get this part, but I don't really get the other part. But the episodic memory, a story puts all that together for you. If you think about any of the world's great religious traditions, like if you were to take the really, truly, deeply salient points of the Bible and bullet point them, you could get them on two sides of a sheet of paper, probably. But it takes 2,000 pages or something, you know, to pound it through our thick heads, to illustrate it, to wrap it in stories, to keep us interested, to point out like the value of it, you know. And so that's how I think about it. It's really, just needs that structure. That's just the way we process ideas, you know, really.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about sitting around, with friends, having a conversation with a couple beers, it's almost always just a series of stories really. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, facts are hard. You know, we don't like to connect those bullet points. We like somebody else to kind of lay it all out for it. And you know, if you look at how difficult a time people have just with this stuff on COVID, they get this fact here, they get that fact there. You know, science is not always super clear cut, and it's about statistics and things like that. And people just like, just tell me the story, you know? And it causes a lot of problems for people just trying to explain things, you know, from a science point of view, because the scientists really like their facts, but the reality is that the human brain is not that good with facts unless you're trained to do it. Unless for you, that's the stories and you know how to put the stories around it. But for most people, it just comes across as kind of an affront.
Yeah. I find as we're getting together with friends again now, as things are starting to open up, a lot of people are telling stories about what happened during lockdown, you know, it's kind of funny, but
yeah.
So can you share a few examples of how stories are actually tied to beer?
Yeah, I mean, the examples I know best are the ones that we've worked on ourselves, so I'm going to lead with those. At Five Rabbit, you know, we're a Latin-themed craft beer, kind of celebrating the culture and cuisine of foods across Latin America. But so we wanted to, this was maybe six, seven years ago, when we were starting to see Radlers and Shandies and those sort of lighter gravity fruit-oriented summer things doing mm-hmm. really well, and we thought that was a good opportunity for us, and so what we did is we decided to take the example of a paleta, and a paleta is just the Spanish word for popsicle, and like up in my neighborhood on the north side of Chicago, we've got these usually older gentlemen with cowboy hats on and like real old school guys with push carts full of basically frozen fruit juice on sticks. And, you know, there's watermelon and guava and mango and, you know, all kinds of Latin flavored fruits and stuff. And it seemed like that was really kind of a fun urban Latin craft like inspiration to build some craft beers on. So we did quite a few years of that, you know, before that kind of low alcohol wheat beer thing started faded out. And, you know, now it's all kind of revolving around seltzers and things, which we're not producing. Really
you,
can't.
You're not
can't.
Doing it. You're not into seltzers yet.
Well, you know, it's a whole like two questions. One is that's extra equipment to do the carbon filtration and all of that. And we're not really scaled up for packaging. We sold our bottler and we haven't bought a canner. So we're still using, you know, mobile for that. But it seemed like too much. And also the question is like, what do you bring to it? You know, are you really going to compete with Boston Beer and Mike's Hard Lemonade guys? And now, you know, everybody else is in that space. And are you going to compete on price? Is there a, like a real premium end of that category? I don't know. You know, we had some ideas. We talked about it a little bit, but it didn't seem to really, you know, it isn't beer. So there's that.
So yeah. Can you compete on story? I mean, the story differentiates, right?
Yeah, we can. But, you know, I mean, that's you got to get in, you got to get your foot in the door. And it seemed like, I mean, yeah, you could absolutely do it, you know, and there's, you know, we're entertaining that notion still thinking about it in Forbidden Root. We can maybe bring a little bit of our botanical experience into that. It's maybe a little bit more obvious a way to make it work, with that brewery than with, Five Rabbit. But, you know, we haven't ruled it out, but again, to make it ourselves, it's, like a Forbidden Root, we can do it as a cocktail. We can just sort of make it up with a concentrate and soda water and serve it like that as a kind of a test to see, can we get some traction? And then we could do production, you know, contract production on flavors that we've created and a brand that we've created. But that's sort of maybe something we're sort of rolling around, but we'll see if it turns into anything. So
when and, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. You know, we've done a ton of them. You know, we've Forbidden Root. We've done some cocktail beers. We made a beer called Industry Night that was I'm blanking on the name of the cocktail. It's got Campari and gin in it. And sorry.
That's okay. So Randy, you mentioned using anchor points in the beer to tie the story all together. Can you give us a couple examples of what you mean by an anchor point?
Well, so the anchor point are individual features, you know, it might be something style specific, like, you know, anchoring it to lagers or, you know, with, we do it Forbidden Root botanicals. You know, eventually those anchor points kind of meld together to form a map. And that map, the edges of that map sort of define your brand space, like where you want to play in. And like the greatest example of this, you know, and it's a kind of a weird company, but Marlboro. Mm-hmm. I had friends that used to work on at Leo Burnett Advertising.
And, I assume you're talking about the cigarette company, right?
Yeah, cigarette company.
Okay.
And so, you know, their whole thing was based on what they call Marlboro Country, right? Mm-hmm. And Marlboro Country was like this place out west. And it had certain things in it and certain things not in it, right? It had cowboys. It had horses. It had rope. Were there Indians in Marlboro Country?
Don't know.
Or I'm sorry, were there eagles in Marlboro Country?
Probably.
No eagles in Marlboro Country because eagles are an Indian symbol and there are no Indians in Marlboro Country.
Okay.
Right? So there were a whole, like, there was a whole list that they had this whole, like, mythology about what was allowed to be there and not. And that's kind of almost how you have to think about it.
That's pretty
cool. You know, and there's a brewery here in Chicago called Metropolitan Brewing. And they specialize in pretty much classic lagers, and they make some like Kolsch and Alt and very traditional classic German style beers. They make them really good beers. And I've done design work and helped them get started and help them like figure out the path to their brand. And you know, they came to me with a name that I thought was, you know, good, but it didn't have anything to do with them. And so they thought about it for a while and they came back and they said, Randy, we decided we really love like 19th century industrial stuff, you know, kind of what we think of as steampunk today, but like that Art Nouveau Paris Metro look. And by the way, my family was in the metal fabrication business, you know, so there was like a personal connection for them. Their anchor points are these pieces of industrial equipment. They're classic lagers. but their whole brand, you know, has this sort of 19th century industrial muscularity that's associated with it, that that Chicago, you know, being the city of big shoulders with the steel mills, you can still see, you know, if you get up in a building, you can still see them down in Gary, Indiana and stuff. And so like I gave them like a, an exercise to do before they started thinking about their beers. I said, imagine if there's a, that if across the street from that steel mill, there's a little brewery down there that's been around for 100 years. It's like struggled through all the smoke and back in the good days when people were, you know, getting good paying jobs out of there and you know, in their heyday, and they've somehow managed to hold on. Like, what would they brew? What would their name, what would the names of their beers be? Hmm. You know, and so that would like gave them an opportunity to kind of be creative and really figure out like a structure for their beers, an approach to their beers, like in terms of what their personalities are, yet within that narrow confines of pretty classic lager and German ale styles.
That's pretty amazing. So, I mean, they kind of have an overarching theme, and then they work their beers and their stories around their beers, I guess, into that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they've invented a robot. You know, one of the things when we first started working on it, one of the labels ended up having a robot on it because, you know, sort of obvious the kind of thing. And then it's like, oh, well, we're going to make a robot beer tap that we'll take to festivals. So they got a bunch of like air conditioner, you know, heating vent duct material and made this like robot, Robbie the robot thing. And then they made a girlfriend for it. And we got like, we're putting the robot on just about everything now. So because people love robots, they love like whimsical robots. So that's sort of their official mascot for the brewery.
So I mean, do you try and actually have a story for each individual beer, or does the story just kind of fit into the overall anchor points for the brewery? How does that work?
You know, that's one that's a little more, because it's lagers, the creative space in lagers is really tight. And so you just have a lot less room to roam in that, you know.
Is, you know, you, how do the stories all tie into the marketing? Does it really drive the marketing or is it vice versa?
For us, it's the beers first. And I think Metropolitan's a little unique because because lager, if you go too far off the farm, you're out of the category, you know, people don't like weird lagers generally. It's not been a thing, you know. Right. Maybe somebody can make that work, but it's generally people like the lager's pretty classic. I don't know why exactly. Maybe it's that old Rheinheitsgebot hanging over everybody's head. But I prefer to be like with Five Rabbit, our big idea is creative modern American craft beer with Latin inspiration. And so that gives us an enormous range of things to play with. And so when we, and that's just the basic idea. And so we let the beer drive everything else. You know, we made a beer that had hibiscus and ginger and honey in it. It was a Belgian triple kind of beer, although we later renamed it a Brut when that style became, people were more interested in the Brut than they were in the triple. We named it Huitzi after the Mexican war god Huitzilopochtli, or the Aztec war god, because he's not only a badass. Well, he's a war god, so, you know, but he's also depicted as kind of a badass hummingbird. And we thought a badass hummingbird was really appropriate beer or figure for a beer that is all about a flower, hibiscus, and honey, too. Because honey, you know, honey, flowers, nectar, you know, the whole thing. So that really kind of worked for us, we thought.
Very cool. So what's the difference between a story and a backstory, then?
Well, backstory, so they can kind of flip, right? So backstory is, you know, maybe you're using some new developmental hop, maybe it may have to do with just kind of how the beer originated. You know, maybe you had a great dinner one night and you realized there was something on the table that really got you thinking about a beer and you decided to make the beer in it. So it's more covert than overt. And that's something you may put in a blog post or do something like that, or put in a little piece of label copy. But what can be a backstory can turn into a story just as easily. You know, we at Forbidden Root, we're making a beer called Ohio High, that's not too hoppy pale ale made with all Ohio ingredients. And and that's like not something that's been done a ton in Ohio, because that's just the sort of place where you wouldn't really think you could get malt and hops from Ohio. But nowadays people are doing that stuff, and there's a micro maltery, and people are just responding like mad to it, because it's their story, right? It's not our story. This is your story, because we have an Ohio, we got a brewery in Ohio. And so we're really trying to reflect the local, see something that the locals will see themselves reflected in, So that's, but that could be just as easily kind of a backstory, but we're choosing to make it, naming it Ohio High and making it the main focus of it.
Well, it's kind of off topic here, but what do you think about the brew local trend that we're seeing around the country, really?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been this sort of conflicted attitude about local. I mean, years and years ago, people are like, oh, local beer is best. But man, I really wish I could get that, Russian River beer or whatever it is, whatever. We're kind of hardwired to respond to rarity and like really get the dopamine going for things that you can't get. I mean, I remember in college, my friends jumped in the car and drove to Kansas City to buy Coors, because that was the closest place you could buy Coors. And that was like one semi-national brand that we couldn't get and had never tasted. And they thought it was worth, driving 1,000 miles round trip or whatever it was to go get a few cases of Coors.
Yeah, we used to drive to Canada. I went to school in New York. We used to drive to Canada to get Canadian beer that we couldn't buy locally.
Yeah. I like local. I mean, I think it's great that people come out and support their brew pubs, that they buy local. People have really kind of figured out freshness does matter. Maybe too extreme sometimes. People I know, I know that there's some people won't buy a IPA if it's over 3 or 4 weeks old. So, but which is a little much, little extreme. But again, freshness does matter. As a beer professional, I'd rather drink a mediocre beer really fresh than a great beer stale. Mm-hmm. Because the difference is so dramatic,
Where do you get the inspiration for either the beer or the story around the beer?
Well, some stuff just sort of finds you, you get these sort of spontaneous things, but, hopefully your overall idea is big enough that you're kind of constantly exposed to it. Like I said, we got the culture of Latin America to work with one brewery. We've got the world of botanicals with the other brewery. So it's pretty endless. If you're stuck for ideas, best thing you could do is just go to a good grocery store or gourmet store or something and start looking around, like, what are they doing in tea? What are they doing in fruit juice? There's a lot of cross category stuff going on, and people like the cross category stuff because it gets them, it's like that perfect combination of things that they've heard of, but are also kind of new. If you start trying to feed people a bunch of tropical fruits they never heard of, or really push it too far, people get intimidated. So trying to find that sweet spot of innovation where it's innovative but not too weird is kind of a trick,
So, Randy, some years ago, you shared some banana beer with me, and you had an interesting backstory behind it. So I thought maybe you'd share that with us.
Yeah, that was a collaboration we did with Cigar City. Mm-hmm. And what we settled on doing is sort of Latin Caribbean desserts. And I think they made an arroz con leche or some kind of rice pudding sort of beer. I can't remember exactly what it was. But we decided to make a dark beer with caramelized plantain bananas, the maduros that you get with a lot of Caribbean food that are the really black, totally ripe plantain bananas. And it took us, so we basically got these black bananas and cut them open and put them on big baking sheets on top of a stove burner, and we caramelized them. It took 3 days to caramelize like 500 pounds of bananas and throw them in the
Them in a regular oven?
We did them on the stovetop, but
goodness,
we had these big aluminum like cookie sheets, and we were frying them, basically like caramelizing them on the frying pans.
That's hilarious.
And so it was like a nightmare project. And we basically picked two different mythologies. I forget what the myth was that they used, but we used a story of a poor, simple kind of farmer type guy that outwitted the devil out of a large sum of money and basically tricked the devil. And there's a story about the devil getting kicked over the moon by a mule. And it was a pretty cool thing. And of course, those were all great things to put on the label. So great to have an opportunity to work with them. They're pretty hot brewery.
So, I mean, that brings me down to the question, how do you execute the strategy from a professional or maybe even a hobby aspect? How do you sort of cleanly execute this and make all come together?
I really think it's important to have stories for beer, whether you're just a home brewer, or I don't mean to say just a home brewer, whether you're a proud home brewer or a commercial brewery, your beers make more sense to people if you can put them in some kind of context. Mm-hmm. And give them some help in how to think about them, right? So, and especially if you think about the market, you know, we get 300 breweries plus in Chicago and more opening all the time, even in the midst of COVID. And the shelves are just groaning with beer that's really crowded. And it's very difficult to use a six pack of cans, you know, which are terrible vehicles. They don't they're confusing to look at. They're twisted every which way. They're just not very good packaging from that point of view. Mm-hmm. So to have a story that you can get online with and tell your story, make it make sense for people. And for homebrewers too, you know, when I started brewing, I made a Buddhist pale ale. Like, what is that? I don't know, you know, but it made you think, right? And I think it was very delicate in color and kind of subtle and elegant, you know, in terms of the hops. I also made a beer called Wifey's Tender Ale that was just basically the house beer around here for a while, because it was a beer that I could make that wasn't a big ass IPA or something or a big strong dark beer that my wife didn't like. So it was like something fun and pleasant. And we made a barley wine called My Old Flame. The whole idea is that lingering longing for a lost love, you know, and that sort of passion. So it had to be really potent and sort of flame looking, you know, in terms of color. So those are super important. But for commercial brewing, like again, with the big idea of whatever your whole brand idea is in mind, I usually present ideas to my partners in the form of the label copy. I mean, even if it's just a draft beer, I like to write out a little description because I think it really helps you make all those decisions when you start brewing. You got to decide on a recipe and how much of this and how much of that and how bitter and how strong. So like, and then brewing methods also, and yeast and fermentation. So you have all these choices. And if you don't have some kind of story, some kind of end goal in mind for what this beer is supposed to feel like to people, it's really hard to make those calls, you know, because otherwise it just sort of becomes like, oh, I guess I'll use this because I have it. And, you know, you end up cleaning out the malt room, and that's not very deliberate, you know? So I think, you know, you want so many of them like focus on ingredients. They don't have to, but if you're using special ingredients, you know, you have to work with those the way they need to be worked with and support them and clear the way for them and not interfere with them. You know, it's really important to have all of the parts and pieces of your recipe kind of trying to do the same thing instead of fighting each other. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about like the purpose of each malt that you put in there, of each hop, like what's the effect on the total recipe there. And then, you know, then you've got your story. You can roll that into packaging, labeling, whatever stories you tell on the web. You know, if you don't create a story for a beer, people will almost make one up or find
interesting.
It's like you just need that, I feel. But again, I come from an art background. That's what I like to do. You know, I don't like beers that are just like beer.
And correspondingly, how much you execute this from a homebrewer perspective, you know, getting a story, well, coming up with a story and then getting it across.
Well, the stories happen basically, drunken conversations are a great way to start. You know, the things you see in your travels, the things you do, inspiration you get from commercial beers or from other categories of food and drink or traveling. You know, if you've been to Belgium or Thailand or Argentina or whatever, you know, you come back with a million different ways you can turn those life experiences into beers. And then it's just really a matter of trying to find those points where you can get some leverage, use them to make the beer a little different from the typical beer, and roll on out with it.
So, I mean, as a home brewer, would you have something like Anchor Points for your brewery? I mean, would you actually think that far ahead or no?
Not necessarily. No, yeah. I mean, that's home brewing. You don't want to overthink it. Yeah. But again, it depends on who you are. You know, I mean, I've known people that have had like home brewery, like they've done, I mean, I used to do my own labels, but I was a graphic designer, right? So it's not that big a deal for me. But I've known people that weren't, that did it anyway, because they just thought it made it more fun. When they walked into a party with an unlabeled bottle versus a bottle with a label on it with a kind of cool story, guess what? Guess who gets the attention, you know? And so I think that's important to think about yourself as an artist, you know, and those beers being a reflection of your personality and your outlook. And you want to share that with people and you want to get a little attention for them and make new friends or whatever it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I noticed some, even some homebrewers, they focus on a particular style, or maybe they're brewing sours or dark beers or whatever, you know, and they've got a little bit of a specialty going anyways. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I've known a ton of homebrewers that, I mean, you know, in mastering homebrew, I got homebrew labels from people all over the world that were really cool and really super professional, you know, from Poland and like all over. And that was really cool for me because I just think it really like livens the party up, you know, because again, those just unlabeled bottles, they're fine. You get them in a glass, they're okay. But, you know, you can dress it up with a little something special to again, tell that story, help people think about it a little bit. It seems better to do that.
Another interesting aspect of this, I guess, is the stories we tell while we're enjoying the beer too, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's been one of the really terrible things about this, this COVID thing is just not being able to do that.
Yeah.
I got another, like a really good example of a story that we,
that would be great.
So at Five Rabbit, we decide, start that again. So I have another beer that has a really kind of good backstory and a good middle story. And we did it for a few years, and I'd been over in Italy judging beers, and I was particularly impressed by a beer that had some Chardonnay grape in it.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was really elegant and it lightened up the beer, and there was a subtle wininess about it that was really nice and worked with the malt. It was just like, oh man, this thing's so great. I'm going to steal this, you know, because as artists, that's what we do. And so, coming back and thinking about Five Rabbit, and we needed a springtime beer. And I had, as a homebrewer, made kind of a specialty of a sort of a slightly strong spring Belgian inflected wheat beer. Mm-hmm. And so kind of thought like, oh, this might be kind of good to combine with, make a little bit Belgian and put some grapes in there. So I got a wheat beer, it's got grapes. What can I do with wheat and grapes? And I had the thought of, well, what if we were to use the missions that were set up by the Spanish and the Portuguese in the New World back in the 1500s and 1600s, you know, that they used as their sort of power base to lord over the land. And what did they bring? You know, and what was that like? And so it almost represents the beginning of the mixed culture of food that we have all through Latin America, that it sort of brings in European ingredients like pork and things like that, along with the Native American ingredients like squash and corn and chilies and, you know, all the rest of that. And it's like, for me, that was an interesting kind of intersection. And so I just started doing some research, and it became obvious that like the two things that the Spanish monks had to do right away when they got to the New World was put wheat and grapes in the ground.
Interesting.
Because without wheat and grapes, there's no communion.
Interesting. That's absolutely true, I guess.
So that was like mission critical for them. So that was like two very first things. So then I started thinking, well, what kind of grapes? And it turns out there were two kinds of grapes that they put in the ground. One of them is related to, I think, a sherry grape, or maybe one of the, like a Madeira, like a Madeira grape or sherry grape. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get my hands on any of that. But the other grape was a very common grape called Muscat of Alexandria. Mm-hmm. And that was brought to Alexandria, Egypt, by the Greeks back when the Greeks were involved in Egypt and, you know, around 0 BCE. Mm-hmm. And that you can get, you know, so we bought some buckets of Muscat juice, and we made this wheat beer. And then we thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to make a beer that kind of honored one fruit or something that the Spanish were planting from Europe? Okay. So one year we did almonds. One year we did figs. One year we did pears.
Nice. You know,
so every year we added one different other thing besides the fruit and wheat. And we called it Missionaria. Hmm. Gave it a little bit of an old-timey look with some sort of old-time calligraphy on it, on the label. And that was a really good beer. And really, like, I think after the first year, we bumped up the gravity. I think the first year was like 5.5, and we bumped it up to 7.5 or something. And that was really beautiful. And then later when I was in Oaxaca, I took the tour of, there's a botanical garden down there in Oaxaca that's an ethnobotanical garden that's really, really interesting. And I found out that the monastery there that garden was a part of was somewhere there, they built a brewery in the 1600s in Oaxaca, right? And so the really interesting thing, and we haven't done anything with this tidbit of information, but I think it'd be really cool, because if you think about the history of Belgium, you know, Belgium's been dominated by all the countries around it, you know, in succession, but Spain was running Belgium in the 1600s, and Spain has no brewing culture, certainly didn't then, they barely do now. And so, although the homebrewers are getting ramped up there, but so here's this place in Oaxaca, in southern Mexico, in, you know, this great region of cuisine, like the heart of Mexican food in Oaxaca, and they had a brewery that may have had a Belgian brewmaster, because where else would they get one? And like, what were they making?
Interesting.
It wasn't lager. It wasn't like Estrella Damm, that's like the big national beer there. It was something funky. And it may have used local ingredients, you know, who knows? So that's like something for me that's super tantalizing. And I think, like, really, you don't have to build one of those beers on actual facts. You can brew them on a sort of a historical reality and then make up your own, like, tale within that historical reality, a little bit of magical reality. So that one's still on my list of something to do with at some point, but it's kind of I'd love to do some research. I'd love to find if there's like any records of that brewery still in the monastery library or whatever, wherever that's gone in Oaxaca. So those kind of sometimes are pretty compelling.
Well, Randy, it'd be very interesting to see what you do with some of those ideas. I wanted to get your closing thoughts on beer and stories and how the two are intricately intertwined.
Yeah, well, it's just really about a matter of kind of adopting a point of view and trying to express either your own personal personality or your family or your brewery or whatever it is. You know, you don't have to hit people over the head with these things always. You can if that's your style, you can do that. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you can whisper and be subtle and play it kind of close to the chest. And again, people look for those stories. They really respond to them. It gives them meaning. It gives you a place in their mind to kind of live. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Awesome. Well, Randy, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today. It's been great having you.
Sure. Great to be here. I always appreciate the opportunity.
Again, my guest today was Randy Mosher, author of Mastering Homebrew, Radical Brewing, and Tasting Beer, and also a partner at Five Rabbit and Forbidden Root Breweries in Chicago. Randy, thank you one more time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Brad.
A big thank you to Randy Mosher for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing magazine. Go to beeringbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, go to blickmanengineering.com for more information. Again, that's blickmanengineering.com. And finally, I urge you to give Beersmith 3 brewing software a try. If you've not grabbed the new 3.1 update, grab it now as it includes improved data storage, additional dry hop options, new mash pH models, new add-ons, and much more. To download a free 21-day trial, go to beersmith.com today. Again, that's beersmith.com. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.